Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 212.
This week on the podcast, media treatment of Ryan Lochte proves that being born a white man is life's Olympic gold medal.
And lest we start to believe her words, Hillary Clinton's actions lay bare her love of the TPP and fracking.
Plus, the Trump campaign is now fully devoid of legitimate people, places, and things.
Trump's African-American outreach strategy is to actively poll at 0% instead of passively poll at 1%.
And screw FEMA. Trump's Plato outreach is the Louisiana flood solution we've all been waiting for.
And CNN finally admits they've heard of Jill Stein.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com, as well as wherever podcasts are sold. iTunes,
right.
Stitcher.
Yes, Stitcher, any of the places.
Any of the places.
Yeah.
We're there.
All the social media. Yeah.
We even do some heroic Instagramming.
We try.
Now and again.
That's right, yeah.
So find us online, find us on Twitter, follow us, talk to us, do what you do.
Yeah, we've been...
Tell us your thoughts on the Olympics.
Right,
because
we've
that's
been
all
an
we
Olympic
care about.
K-hole the last
yeah,
2 weeks.
Right, it's...
I was on vacation and I was still watching the Olympics.
I know.
By the way.
I went on vacation because while you were on vacation, you missed the wedding of a good friend of ours
yes,
that
I
had
know.
To go to. And yeah. I was like sitting in my hotel room at night in Santa Barbara watching gymnastics.
Right.
Like
why
a
were
loon
you doing that?
Who didn't care that I was in a vacation town. It's
yes.
so... I
yes,
always
you could have
forget
been
how
a fancy
exhausting
winery.
This is.
Yeah. And, yeah.
I didn't have the energy for that
it's
because
a real
I had so many Olympic commitments
I
to
hadn't
make.
Watched men's diving and you have to watch men's diving.
Yeah, you have
I
to.
Mean, if you're me.
Right.
And so yesterday I pulled up the app and I watched all of the semifinals and finals. It took me almost 4 hours.
Of course it did.
Like that's what I did yesterday afternoon. What's wrong
with
me?
I have watched more 3 hour stretches of gymnastics and diving than I synchronized swimming.
Yeah.
I fell down a synchronized swimming K-hole recently.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't even seen the groups yet. I only made it through the duos. They're all the same, by the way, guys. Like I don't know why I was so invested.
Yeah.
I can't stop myself though.
Yeah. But if you have been watching the Olympics as much as us, or maybe if you've just been alive in the world, you realize that the Olympics coverage has been shitty on almost all the levels.
Every level.
I mean, just in the amount of, from starting with the amount of commercials to how they're showing everything and where they won't stay in anywhere more than a minute. And
I
like,
mean,
what,
every year it gets
the,
worse.
The cutaways to Ryan Seacrest, please get off my television at the
Why
Olympics.
Why is he at the Olympics?
It's all been terrible.
It's a nightmare.
It's been terrible on...
On a more important plane as well.
More important plane.
Yeah. There's been shades of classism, racism, and sexism.
All of it.
All over the coverage.
Yes.
There has, you I'm sure have been following how this Ryan Lochte story got covered.
Totally.
And the differences between how that and the
yes.
Gabby Douglas story of not putting her hand on her heart during the, you know.
Right.
I was going to say during the 4th of July. During the Pledge of Allegiance. No,
yeah.
not during the
No.
What was it?
The national anthem.
By the way, I have
at the Pledge of Allegiance is when you're supposed to do it. You're not even supposed to do it during...
No,
the
national anthem.
It's not a thing. It
no.
just looked weird because she was the
only
one
who didn't
out of the
do
five
it.
Of them who wasn't doing it. But you're not supposed to be
no,
doing that.
No, she wasn't doing anything.
You know what you're not supposed to be doing? Laughing through the entire thing, which is what Michael Phelps did on the exact same night and
yeah.
nobody seemed to care.
I know.
But,
well,
anyway.
White men. They can laugh.
White men, I know.
No one's questioning his patriotism because of his white maleness.
That's right. Yes.
But so there's been a lot of discussion about how the sort of difference between how those two things were covered.
Yes.
There's also been a surprisingly and good amount of discussion about how a lot of the time when women win medals, the headline will be like, wife of so-and-so less important guy wins Olympic gold medal.
Well, yeah. Well, that one, the
time
the
that
swimmer,
there was a swimmer whose
right,
husband
like,
got credited.
And here's
the man
the
responsible,
man
for,
responsible
her win.
For the whole thing.
Right. It was like, except for swimming it
except
and winning
right,
the medal.
Except for doing it.
And then
yeah.
there was the Bears... Like wife wins the Chicago like a Chicago
oh,
paper
yes,
has
yes, yes,
like
yeah.
Bears wife
yeah,
Bears uh-huh. member wife wins gold medal
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah.
So there has though been a sort of surprising amount of coverage of that, which has been great
right.
because a lot of the time, like one of the reasons people don't care as much about women's sports is because we just keep asking women like what they're wearing and what their marital status is and whether they're hot or not.
I know. Well, and there was also even the story too that. They ended up having to apologize for, but who was it that who went on Grindr?
Oh yeah,
right?
I can't remember who that was.
Yeah.
But I did. I only read the headline.
And then, like,
of my story. That's
outed
why I don't remember
a bunch of people, including people in countries where it's illegal to be gay, mm-hmm. including people who
yeah.
are 18. Like, so it hasn't been that wasn't NBC, but
right.
like it just on
also,
the whole it was American journalism,
right.
supposed
don't
journalism anyway. That's not journalism.
Doing
but,
that.
I mean, so it's been.
It's been
kind
a while.
Of a disaster.
A wild
It hasn't
Olympics.
Taken away from my love of watching the Olympics are the women greatest. Flip around. And
this is our third like Olympics that, but... coverage era segment.
I know.
Period.
Yeah.
And I think if you have been listening to this podcast since the beginning, which maybe only our moms have,
yeah.
you know that we just like love the
you
Olympics.
You probably weren't listening from the beginning because if you only listened... If you started listening at the beginning, you would have been like,
"Stop!
Who are these two jokers?"
Please get out of my cell phone.
It wasn't great.
Yeah, I think at our first anniversary, we played a clip of our very first episode.
Yeah, we had no idea what we were doing.
Right, you can hear me.
We
go,
weren't
okay,
less
go.
Genius.
No, we were as genius, right. And it started with a Breitbart story. I mean, with the death of Andrew Breitbart,
yes.
And it started with the. Sandra Fluke.
Sandra Fluke and Rush Limbaugh. And
Rush Limbaugh thing.
Exactly.
We still remember the week well.
It was a great week.
That's why we started the podcast. We were like, this week is the week.
We have to
do something about this.
We have to talk publicly about
exactly.
this.
But since then, we've settled mostly into our electoral news coverage.
Yes.
And we have a lot of that this week as
but
well.
We'll break for the Olympics. We'll break
we're
for
not
a good
afraid.
Sinkhole.
Grey's Anatomy, sinkholes, Olympics, all of it is stuff that's fair for us to cover.
Yeah, anything.
Anything.
Is. whatever we
want to cover. if you've been just watching the Olympics and you have not been reading the news, because who has time for all of this?
Oh, my God.
There were some important election stories.
There were.
That we want to make sure you know about.
Yeah.
One of them is that Hillary announced her transition team.
Yes.
And that's big news in part because, like with her VP pick, we were looking to see who she picked in order to see whether or not she's actually planning to play ball with this... like large minority within her party that is on the very far left.
Yeah.
And it sounds like she might not be.
She's not. Yeah.
She the person who's chairing her transition team is Ken Salazar, who's
yes.
he's a former senator from Colorado. He also used to be the Secretary of the Interior. But he is sort of famously pro TPP and pro fracking.
Real TPP lover.
So the two issues that really two of the issues that really helped coalesce the Sanders coalition
yes.
are these issues. You know, there are a few of these issues. We talk, you know, income inequality is one of them.
Sure, and
but
campaign finance
is sure. one of them. But like free trade is a big one.
Yes.
And she continues to pick people to become part of her team
right.
who are active advocates for free trade.
Yes.
Including Tim Kaine, who up until the Thursday before the Friday he was
right.
announced.
And we heard from Terry McAuliffe at the DNC talking about
she's
how she was...
She's
going
to pass the TPP. Don't worry about it.
Pass
a couple changes.
We got you guys.
Yeah.
You know, so...
So this is
it's
a
not
sign...
as if, you know, Ken Salazar in the scope of, like, American political life is a fucking nobody.
He's a generic guy.
And he's not going to, like, mean anything necessarily, like, for us as a nation.
Right.
But what these are is they're decisions that
yeah.
she is making that we are looking to see what it is
what
that she might be thinking, what kind of
we're
administration
talking about
she's
here.
Going to have.
Yeah.
So...
And it's one thing also if you pick... You pick one guy who used to be pro-TPP as of the day before you announced him,
right.
and then maybe that's just a unlucky thing that happened. For right. for you to continually pick people who are consistent on this position
right.
is a sign, and this
right.
is a position that you have disavowed,
right.
that's a sign that you're not as disavowy
right.
as you
and
could be.
And for you to have been a Secretary of State who went around the world trying to get everybody to frack,
selling fracking,
and then not... coming out against it, you know, she
right.
wouldn't
she,
come out,
she,
or
still,
she wouldn't
the,
stand for a moratorium on fracking.
Nope.
She has, you know, and now
she's signaled to us that she's actually quite pro-fracking.
Right.
Because Ken Salazar in 2014 literally said, there is not a single case where hydraulic fracking has created an environmental problem for anyone.
Except
That's
all the cases.
That's an outright lie.
That's a lie.
That's like this is documented. This is
right.
documented by multiple sources.
Right.
There are numerous...
There's a great movie about this.
There's a great movie called Gasland about this, and a follow-up movie that
yeah.
is like Gasland 2, I think, or something
yeah.
like that.
Like, if there's two movies about it...
That's enough.
That's it.
But I mean, like, this has been well documented that there
yeah.
have been health impacts of fracking.
Of course.
So... Like, the fact that he is living in a... He's living in a delusional
right,
anti-science
that was not that long ago,
world.
People.
This is in 2014. He's also criticized... There's an anti-fracking measure that's going to be on the ballot in Colorado in November, and he has criticized that as well this week.
Yeah.
He also... He works... He's a lobbyist.
Well, yeah.
Which, of course...
Well, he's like a big Clinton...
He's a big...
You know,
yeah, he's a Clintonite, so he's
yeah.
he's a lobbyist at WilmerHale in D.C., and he... In the course of his activities at WilmerHale, has advocated for Fast Track. He's advocated for the TPP, all of them on behalf of either executives at huge corporations or the corporations themselves.
Sure.
So he's And that's on top of being in favor of free trade as a politician himself, right, and having been consistent on that point for his entire political career. So these are signs that these progressive issues...
Well, you know who else has been consistent on that for their entire political careers? The Clintons. Exactly.
Yeah. So progressive groups, rightly, have been expressing not just disappointment that this is sort of a frustrating continual of a policy that we were supposed to abandon, but also questions about whether she understands what the political climate right now
exactly.
is.
Yeah.
Like what race she's in.
Right. I know.
I mean, I've been meeting more Donald Trump supporters than I care to be meeting.
Sure.
And I've been trying to engage them in conversation because I really am sort of fascinated as to how a lot of them seem like reasonable, educated people. And a lot of them are saying that, it's issues like this that make them not want to vote for Clinton, and they're just looking for a change. And they're oddly able to disavow a lot of the racist rhetoric.
I know.
Including people, I met a young woman the other day who was Korean, who was of an immigrant family herself, who somehow couldn't connect to that rhetoric and didn't was willing to ignore it. Yeah. But I think that this is a problem if she's not really answering to her constituency.
Especially in the TPP, because he's running against it, obviously.
Yeah.
So
there is an alternative on that issue.
Yeah.
And her party is not for this.
No. The president is.
Right. The president is, but her voters are not.
No, they're not.
And it's the president's not voting for her.
No.
People have to vote.
I think a lot of the people who supported her in the primary, though, don't see this as a thing that is a thing.
I think that a lot of the people who supported her in the primary are also not free trade people. I think that they don't care about
free trade. Right. Yes, exactly.
I don't think that it's an all-consuming issue.
And they aren't able to process why it's a big deal to people either. Which is,
because
and
they don't
she
live
isn't
in a
either, which
manufacturing
is why she's doing shit
state,
like this.
You know,
because she doesn't
exactly
get it, which is why you just said you don't think that she gets it.
Yeah.
It's because she doesn't.
It's because she doesn't get it. Here's the rest of the team. The rest of the team is a lot of Obama and Clinton hacks who we know from years past. We have Tom Donilon, who's the National Security Advisor. Was the National Security Advisor for Obama. Neera Tanden, who was an aide to Obama and is now she's the head of the Center for American Progress, which is a progressive think tank. We have Jennifer Granholm.
Sure.
How is Jennifer Granholm still in
the mix?
She's
doing it all.
She's a pundit. She doesn't do anything but pundit around.
And give convention speeches.
Yeah,
why
did she get a spot at the convention?
Wacko convention speeches.
Is it just because she's wackadoodle that she gets those?
I guess
she's the former Michigan governor.
And
that's not even a real notable thing.
No.
There's a million former governors who didn't get to speak at the convention.
I know, it's very bizarre.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
We have Maggie Williams, who's the head of Harvard's Institute of Politics. And then we have the chief economist is going to be Heather Bushey, who's the executive director of the Washington Center for Equitable Growth. And then two Clinton aides are moving full time to the transition team, who are policy advisors of hers.
Right.
So the rest of the team is sort of not notable. What's notable is that I was called twice in the last 2 weeks by the Clinton campaign.
You know, I've been called by them too.
I know, but you've given money to them in the past.
I have
you?
Not. No, I have. I know. I've given money to the DNC.
Oh, you gave money to the DNC. Right. Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
slow your roll.
I was wait a minute. No, but you I've never given a dime to the DNC.
Oh yeah.
And they called me and they were like, "Since you're a former supporter or past supporter," and
I
was
like,
"Tell me."
That's what they said to me too.
Tell me where.
Don't start the call with that.
No.
And
then
off on the
poor guy was like an older guy.
I know. See, I had a sweet young lady call me too.
Yeah. He was like, "Well, it says that right here," and I was like, "I'm sorry,
right.
You were lied to. I don't know. I know. I've never been a Clinton supporter."
Yeah.
There's also some new updates on the Clinton Foundation dramas that have been enveloping news cycles.
This has been dogging her for a while, but there were some emails that got released about it, and Trump is sort of going in on it, which makes sense.
The sort of result of all of that is on Thursday, Bill Clinton told the Foundation employees, that the Clinton Foundation is not going to accept foreign or corporate donations if Hillary Clinton wins in November.
Now,
he also said he would leave the board if she wins,
and that's fine and good. I think the issue is that
it's too late
because so many people, and including people within her own party, there have been a lot of
Democrats
who have been on record who have been saying, A, you're the Secretary of State. B, we know that you're going to be running for president because we're not fools.
Right.
You have to stop doing this because, this doesn't look great. And it's not as if this bug wasn't put in her ear eight years ago.
Well, and
if not before, really.
No, I mean, no, it's true. And it is, There's not any official proof that it has resulted in anything.
No, like any sort of like pay for play or anything like that.
No, but
like,
the emails did show that there were meetings that were set because of, you know, when she was the Secretary of State, that people who were donors to the Clinton Foundation got State Department meetings.
Yes.
Because
they got preferential treatment.
They got preferential treatment because of their connection to the Clinton Foundation.
We don't know if they got anything.
Right,
but
exactly.
They were able, right, there's they no had proof an ear, that they got an ear is what they
right.
got.
There's no proof that resulted in anything, but a lot of the time, you don't need proof that resulted in anything because the meeting itself is the proof.
Right. And a lot of these, the Clinton Foundation does great work, but a lot of these countries that they're taking money from are not countries that you would want to be having the money from probably anyway.
Well,
like, I mean,
it's one thing to like the conceit is, I think, smart in some respects, and they do really good work.
Yeah.
The issue is that if you know, and it's fine for an ex-president to do that because he has the connections abroad and he's not currently involved in the political climate at home. The issue is that the Clintons never really stepped out of their political role.
No, they didn't.
So instead of becoming just philanthropists or just people that are sort of greasing the wheels of philanthropy, essentially, they continue to operate in the political realm as they were taking these donations from countries like
Saudi Arabia,
UAE, Qatar, Kuwait, Oman, Brunei, Algeria, places with bad human rights track records, places where we...
Well, and even in the case of Saudi Arabia, who's funding terrorism.
Funding terrorists. Places that we wouldn't want to compromise our... You know, that have conflicting interests with our own nation and that we wouldn't want our relationship with to compromise our own interests. And so this is not really about whether or not they will in the future continue taking these donations. They, of course, should not.
Right.
The question is, though, that there is a track record of donors dating back years that have already made their donations. Saudi Arabia is one of the biggest donors to the Clinton Foundation.
Yeah.
And we already know that we have a very compromised situation with Saudi Arabia because a lot of our political class has close personal ties to the Saudi royal family and to the oil money and, you know, to the oil industry in Saudi Arabia. And so the fact that they are also funding ISIS and a lot of other terrorist activity is problematic, to say the least.
Quite.
And our ability to act on that is often infringed by our relationship with Saudi Arabia. But so this is sort of a continuation of that problem. And that's not just a problem because it's a problem. It's a problem because this is a year where it's a political problem, too.
Right. Well, and if Trump can actually hit her for this, I don't know that he has the ability to hit her for anything because he can't stay on message for longer than 24 hours. Although this week was the closest we've gotten, I think.
But it was
maybe
overshadowed by chaos in his campaign,
which
we'll get to.
But, you know, there was a poll in June that 72% of people said that it bothered them either a little or a lot that the Clinton Foundation took money from foreign countries. So this is the, you know, the 3/4 of the country is bothered by this.
Well, and
you should be. I mean,
exactly. This is a number of people who are bothered by her taking them
Secretary of State, right?
Like, this is not a private citizen who's involved in this organization. This is our Secretary of State,
right?
So, in any case, that is continuing to dog her, and they're taking the too little, too late approach to dealing with it, which is
it's a classic maneuver.
They're bold. The Clintons are really fucking bold. She's like, fuck it. You know what? TPP and fracking. Come aboard, everyone. You know, Bill Clinton is like, fuck it. We'll wait until August before we stop taking Saudi money at the Clinton Foundation.
Well, no, we'll wait until November.
Or you're right. We'll wait until we see if we win.
Because if we lose, then we're going to keep
taking it. Yeah. And we're never going to go away.
Right.
Because that's been proven.
I know, seriously.
This is like, they're real fucking bold.
Yeah, I agree.
And they're not playing ball with anyone.
No.
Except themselves.
They're
playing ball with their own selves.
Right.
Hillary and Bill Clinton are playing ball with each other. That's about it. She also hilariously can't find anyone to do debate prep with
her. This is funny, actually. I mean,
it's fair.
How,
it's true.
How could you?
Yeah,
you have to find a Donald Trump stand-in? I mean, that's not easy.
That's not easy. Last Sunday, Robbie Mook said, it's very hard to find someone to mimic the reckless temperament and the hateful instincts and divisive instincts of Donald Trump, which is fair. Hilariously, Alan Dershowitz said that he would do it.
Right. Now, I heard another take on this, is that it's not that they are having trouble finding someone who can do Donald Trump. It's that they're having trouble finding someone in Clinton's circle who she would be comfortable with, who will be comfortable saying the things that Donald Trump is going to say to her. And I think there's some merit to that.
Guys, I know a zillion asshole New York blowhards who could do this.
Right.
I mean, this is literally any New York politician could do this. They've been dealing with Trump for the last 30 years. Like, they know how to do Donald Trump.
Right.
Get fucking Andrew Cuomo in there. That man can probably fake Donald Trump
pretty
well.
But, like, Andrew Cuomo doesn't want to go in there and, like,
talk about...
He's not going
to say that shit to her.
No, exactly. That's the thing.
He's afraid of her. They're all afraid of her because she's basically running a mob. So, like... There's no one, and Alan Dershowitz is just trying to promote a book. That's why he was all over, Politico reported today that he would do it. That's because he's promoting a book called Electile Dysfunction, A Guide for Unaroused Voters.
Right. But can you imagine some elected official who was friends with Hillary Clinton showing up to a debate and then ragging, ragging on Bill Clinton's past sex history and how he was a womanizer and Hillary Clinton, you know, is anti-feminist because, like, she tried to take these women down. Like, these are things that are going to come up in the debate because he said them before already. He's probably got some up his sleeve that he hasn't even unveiled.
He probably doesn't know the ones that he has up his sleeve yet because he's going to off the cuff think of them at the moment.
Exactly, yes.
I mean, he can't even know. Like, there's no way for even him to prepare for this moment.
No.
So, I feel like that, I mean, this has been, there's been a long history of reports that one of the issues in the Clinton circle is that everyone is afraid of her, and so no one ever tells her the truth. Yeah. So, like, when she got into this race, no one was honest with her about the kinds of obstacles she was going to face.
Right.
Not just because she's Hillary Clinton. She can expect the obstacles that have to do with Monica Lewinsky and, you know, the 94 crime bill and whatever.
Right.
She was not expecting the Bernie Sanders obstacle.
They couldn't see that.
And that was, we've been telling you about that since 2013, at least.
At least.
If not before.
Yeah.
We probably said during the election in 2012 that we saw 2016 as a populist cycle.
Yeah, we did.
Because we knew what was happening.
Right.
We're people that watch and see the world.
That's right.
And, like, we're not special insight. It didn't take special inside knowledge of politics to know that. Like, it just took brains and eyes. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that this is a sort of one of the things that I have always worried about her within these debates, because she's a good debater if you're in, like, a
If you're having a policy
if you're in a legitimate debate
with her. Right, exactly.
She's a smart lady who knows a lot about
policy. She's good
policy.
On her feet. And she's
good on her feet. Yeah. She's even a little charming in debate sometimes, which is hard because she's terrible in front of a crowd. But, I mean, this is not going to be a debate.
No.
She's not. This is not. This is.
It's a show.
This is a show.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump.
Puts on a good
show. Puts on a good show.
She puts on a terrible show.
Bill Clinton puts on a good show, but Hillary Clinton puts on a terrible show.
Yeah, she's not a
showman.
She's a showman.
Showwoman.
No, she's not.
In any case, the Trump campaign had a big shakeup this week, which thankfully overshadowed his one almost normal week in the campaign so far. Yeah. So this Friday, Paul Manafort, his campaign manager, who stepped in after
Corey Lewandowski.
Was fired.
Right.
Resigned, but was fired.
Was fired.
Right.
Exactly.
And this is sort of the last.
It played out in sort of a weird way, actually, because
weird
they announced that they were going to be doing a campaign shakeup, but it didn't involve firing him.
No, it involved essentially demoting him.
Demoting him, which he probably wasn't going to be happy about, but he wasn't getting fired.
No.
They had a meeting of all of the muckety mucks.
Right. That. Their pollster,
Kellyanne Conway, who is now the campaign
who's
manager.
Now the campaign manager.
Yep.
Roger Ailes,
an
unofficial consultant to the campaign.
Who now is not at Fox News, by the way. I'm sure you've heard that.
We briefly mentioned it last time.
Right, we mentioned
Stephen Bannon, who is the chair of Breitbart.
Right.
And nothing but reputable people on this.
Yeah, exactly.
Panel. And then Manafort was also there for part of the meeting.
Yeah.
But at the meeting, Roger Ailes got real up in everyone's business because they screened a bunch of TV commercials that they were planning to release, and he thought, and they were commercials that Manafort had overseen, and he thought that they were terrible. Some backstory though.
Yeah.
Is that because Paul Manafort was sort of like the only sort of old guard Republican in the campaign.
Right. He was brought in as a person
to
steady the ship.
You know,
yes, exactly.
He had been with the campaign. He helped them pull in Mike Pence, who is crazy, but in a more sort of legitimate seeming way.
Right.
He kind of helped squash the Never Trump movement because he has ties to the GOP establishment and ties to D.C.
Yeah.
And so, but he and Lewandowski hated each other.
Right.
Trump and Lewandowski got into big fights because they're both big personalities.
Right.
And so after Lewandowski got fired, I think they brought in Manafort thinking this will steady things out.
Yeah.
But two issues. One is that Trump continued to call Lewandowski for advice after firing him.
Right.
And two is that Lewandowski and Manafort hated each other.
Yeah.
So Trump and Manafort started getting into it.
Yeah.
And then this was like as the campaign is like turning into a sinking ship. So yeah. They had been butting heads anyway. Trump had started calling him low energy, which was what he called Jeb Bush. So that's that's an epithet in the Trump
world.
He totally lost his shit at Manafort last week because there was a very damaging article in the Times that kind of laid out how the campaign was falling apart.
Right.
Hilariously, though, the Times then reported on their own effect on the campaign falling apart as if they were like heroes.
Right,
like the Times really overstated how important their article had been. And they didn't mention it was their article. They kept calling it a news article. And then at the very end, they were like, the article written by the New York Times. And I was like, you are the New York Times.
So good.
What are you doing? In any case, so that happened. So on Tuesday, they announced they're doing this campaign shakeup.
Right.
Ailes had sort of had it out for Manafort. Lewandowski had it out for Manafort. Right. Trump is under the control of whoever he's near.
Right. Kellyanne What's-Her-Face, who's the campaign manager, claims she's never been in a meeting with Roger Ailes, by the way, too.
Right.
Because
they
don't want anything. They don't want their name attached to Roger Ailes. She's like, oh, well, they're old friends. But like,
we
he's
weren't
not
in a
even
meeting.
A formal or informal. They
never
just
mind
chat
that everyone
friends,
claims that they were in this Sunday meeting, this emergency Sunday meeting together,
right, exactly.
along with Stephen Bannon, the Breitbart chair, who is now the chief executive of the campaign.
And also, the other thing that came of this when he hired this Stephen Bannon person from Breitbart is everybody was like, oh, so this really is just a front for Trump TV.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, like, that was because, like, people have been, like, questioning whether that is the case now. And then as soon as, like, the Breitbart thing happened,
right.
they're like,
it was like,
oh,
he's starting a TV network.
We get it.
Right.
Roger Ailes and the Breitbart people. Oh, it's like Trump media.
Now this makes sense.
Now
this is why you run. This is why he's running.
Right.
So then on Thursday, some new issues.
Right. Paul Manafort's still working for the campaign.
They essentially are putting him back to his old sort of DC liaison role.
Right.
And then on Thursday, a wave of reports breaks about his own business dealings and some alleged payoffs with the Russia-allied Ukrainian officials.
Right. Yes.
And then, you know, a lot of focus suddenly is on Putin
and he'd taken
and
money from
Trump's
some of these people
relationship.
Or from, like, legislators in Ukraine or something.
There had been millions
and
in payoffs. There had been money taken from them. It was at various times.
Right.
It showed a long sort of sustained interest in intervening in, you know, Russian
in Crimea,
and in Crimea, like in sort of the Russian attempt to take over Crimea. So this suddenly Trump, who has been releasing commercials like a traditional candidate, delivering speeches that are mostly on script.
Right. He's been reading from the prompter
much more
than last
week.
Right. Yeah.
He has gone to Louisiana to talk to, you know, we're going to tell you a little bit about the floods and the update about that. But
he's like doing the normal things.
He's doing the normal things
that you would be
he
doing.
He apologized for saying
vaguely
all this offensive shit. Like, he didn't tell us what he was sorry for, but he said he was sorry for some of the things he said.
Yeah.
But so he's starting to have a normalish week, and suddenly it's overshadowed by Paul Manafort having ties to the one place and the one guy that Trump is trying to run away from.
Right. Well, yes.
His close personal friend,
Vladimir
Putin.
That's the thing. I mean, we already...
the ties are there.
The ties are there, and everybody already sort of, like, has this vision of them being best friends because they've
and also there's too many hilarious graphics of... There was the Photoshop picture of them horseback riding together. There's the graffiti of them kissing.
Yeah.
There's just too many funny pictures of them together
to
not have that image.
Yeah.
I can only think of them horseback riding and kissing.
Right.
Like, my image of the Trump-Putin friendship is very homoerotic.
Right. Oh, yeah, for sure.
And not because I don't even think it would be, but just because the only images I have of it are hugely homoerotic.
Yeah, exactly.
In any case, Trump is in North Carolina campaigning when he hears about the news breaking about Manafort's ties to Ukraine. And he was like, get this fucker out of here.
No, I never want to see this
I never want to see him again. So then Manafort resigns, but Eric Trump also broke on Fox News
we're air quoting resigns.
Yeah, because Eric Trump literally said, my father just didn't want to have a distraction looming over the campaign. Like, Paul Manafort got fired. The Times had the greatest paragraph.
This quote is so good.
Of all writing about this situation.
Yeah.
When they said, a change in the leadership of Trump's campaign may not stop Mr. Trump from making abrupt decisions based on news coverage, playing advisors off one another, and following the guidance of whoever may be traveling with him or has just spoken to him on the phone. Like, they were basically like,
this kind
of move is fine, I guess, but it's not going to stop the problem.
No.
It's not going to stop the bleeding.
Yeah.
So Paul Manafort's deputy from his liaison days is going to fill in as a liaison.
Sure.
But essentially, they just lost their only credible connection to the establishment GOP. So good work, Trump campaign. Although my parents had a good point, which was that some of these new people are just as lunatic-y as Trump. And because they of that, are. They might be able to be straighter with him than someone like Manafort,
maybe.
Who's used to operating in a traditional political climate.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Who, I've been drawing a comparison a lot recently between, political outlandish racism like Donald Trump's and political genteel racism like Southern, like Lindsey Graham.
Yes.
I think part of the reason we're starting to see Clinton polling in weird places that, Georgia.
She was down 6 points.
North Carolina.
She was down 6 points in Texas last week.
Yeah, exactly. We're seeing Southern Republicans become very uncomfortable with the kind, and I think it's because
she's been rolling out a lot of Republicans supporting her.
That has not
over the last 2 weeks,
comfortable with this kind of overt racism because they are contending with some bad history themselves. If you are Georgia and you participate,
they're racist.
And you participate in overt racism, then all that anyone knows about Georgia is racism. So you have just shot yourself in the foot as a credible. As a credible political environment,
genteel racism is how you
create racist systems that last.
Right.
And
that's right.
That if there's one place that knows that, it's the South.
Exactly.
They got called out for their overt racism, so they went the genteel route. They've been racist ever since.
And Trump is blowing all that up.
Trump is blowing all that up because he's showing them for what they are.
Right.
Which is racist.
Yeah.
But so in any case, I think that to some degree, it's going to hurt. It's going to harm Trump in places that are more tied to sort of genteel prejudice. Yeah. But it's going to make it so that there's someone in his campaign to be like, no, shut up.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
He needs some New Yorkers in there to be like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, he needs a no man.
Yeah.
Or a woman.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Hillary Clinton doesn't have one. So why does he need one?
That's true. Yeah.
But I mean, we're literally the craziest campaign because there's no people.
No.
Anywhere. If there's anything that I've learned from working in Hollywood, it's that everyone needs a no person.
Big time.
Everyone. There is not one person in Hollywood who is powerful and pleasant to work with who doesn't have a no person.
Right.
If you are an asshole, it is because you do not have a no person.
Yep.
So this is a curious situation we find ourselves in.
But speaking of racism, though.
Trump did some great racism
earlier this week. Yeah.
He has been getting a lot of pressure from the party establishment to do outreach to black voters.
Right, because he's pulling it,
oddly,
1%. 1%
or 0%. It's, so funny. They're coming up with, this is, an insurmountable challenge.
Right.
An insurmountable challenge for him.
Hillary Clinton is polling better with blacks than Obama did.
And it's not because of anything she's doing.
No, she's not doing a damn thing.
No. She's just being a human being who's not Donald Trump.
Right.
And Donald Trump is polling, in some cases, between 0 and 1% African-American voters.
Yeah.
So on Friday, he makes this a very head-scratching attempt to do some outreach to African-American voters at a rally in Michigan that is, A, filled mostly with white voters, and B, being held in a town whose population is 93% white.
Right.
So he went
And also, his campaign rallies are also 100% white, usually.
Right. Well, and especially this week, because there was one 18-year-old Indian guy
at one of his rallies
and he got kicked out for being Indian.
Yeah.
Because they were like, you must be a protester. And he was like, no, I'm literally here to see the rally. And they were like, nope.
No, you're not.
He's not voting for Trump anymore.
No.
That was reported. Some of the hits in his attempt to grab some black voters for himself is... you're living in poverty, your schools are no good, and you have no job. 58% of your youth is unemployed. What the hell do you have to lose?
That's right.
One point about that. That 58% statistic has been debunked all over the place. It is, if you have to count black people that are in school, or black men that are in school.
Correct. High school or college.
Yep. So high school students who don't have to be employed because they're children. In order to get to 58%.
Yes.
If you took any demographic and included high school students as an employment statistic, you would end up with a huge unemployment rate for any demographic of people because high school students often don't have jobs.
Right. Well,
and college students as well.
I do get what he's trying to do.
I see what he's trying to do. No, he's trying to be like, this shit's not working
for
you.
Bernie Sanders did this all the time. Yeah. He talked about what the unemployment rate was in the African American and the Latino
community. It's high. It's too high.
Because it's high. And that's a problem. But he's not offering solutions to fix it. I would contend that Hillary Clinton is not offering many solutions
to fix it.
She's
doing offering
much better,
not overt
certainly.
Racism.
She's not offering not overt racism.
So that's fun.
Exactly.
Because this is from the same guy who has militantly stuck to his guns during these police shootings on just saying nice things about the police and making statements about innocent people that were shot by the police.
Order and, he's talked about obviously right, coded which is or not coded. Coded yeah, I mean, it's, whatever. It's
but
not,
I mean, he's not only used heavily coded language and less coded language to talk right. about issues that are primarily of interest to the African American community as a personal concern, right. but he's also like specifically like gone out of his way to question the sort of character of innocent victims of police violence, right. which is the sort of issue that is currently in political focus in the African American yeah. community right now.
Yeah.
So this is like, this is an attempt to be like, things are shitty for you guys, so why not take the gamble?
Yeah.
Which is, I contend that you can't afford to take a gamble when things are shitty for you.
Agreed.
Rich white people can afford to always take the gamble because yep. they'll stay rich and white, whatever happens.
It's so true.
You can't stop being white once you're white, and you rarely stop being rich in this country once you're rich.
That's so true.
So, I mean, that's they can afford to take all that's sorts right. of gambles.
He also said, at the end of 4 years, I guarantee you that I will get over 95% of the African-American vote. I promise you, because I will produce.
That was the only ad-lib line in that segment, by the way. He just ad-libbed that to himself. It's hilarious. Yeah. He also said, no group in America has been more harmed by Hillary Clinton's policies than African-Americans. No group. If Hillary Clinton's goal was to inflict pain on the African-American community, she could not have done a better job. I mean, now, this is an area where a lot of us may agree.
I was going to say, there's some...
If he could
get that language sort of, like, collected in a less inflammatory way and actually figure out how to sell it, he might get some people to buy it.
Yeah. No, I mean...
But this is not it.
Trump supporter that I have met... I'm meeting too many of them, you guys.
Well, I was just in Iowa. They were everywhere.
Well, that's it. My parents were at an upstate county fair recently, and they were like, this was an alarming look at what's happening out there.
Right.
But, it has always been a sort of a plea for something different, saying whatever we're doing isn't working and we need something different.
Right.
And if he could figure out how to vaguely offer something different without saying all this other bullshit,
right.
he could probably be polling better with African-American voters.
I think so too.
I mean, I think a lot of African-American voters probably rightfully feel like something different would be in order.
Right. Yes.
Because what's happening now isn't working.
It's not great.
I would contend that what something different should be is not a return to law and order language.
Certainly not.
That's not different. That's the wrong way. By the way, that's not different.
No, we did.
We
that.
Did that already.
It should be something different that we haven't done. Right. Yet, that we haven't tried yet.
Let's, like not a return to the difference that caused the problem that we're having right now.
That's right.
But like a different.
Right. That's what we don't want. Yeah.
But so, and his answers to the answers that he claimed he had to the problems facing the Black community were the same answers he has,
of course,
to the problems facing America, apparently, which are things that are not answers.
Right.
Because they're vague, like stopping so they're not immigration plans. But stopping immigration doesn't solve problems for the Black community. That just creates problems for the not Black community. And
right.
like, and also probably by extension, the Black community too. Like, it just doesn't solve any problems.
Yeah.
He did, I think, cleverly, but also, it's like, this has a touch of racism, but I think is also like a fun, not fun, but like a funny route for him to be going, where he talked about how inner cities, because they generally have Democratic leadership, are a sign that Democrats really can't contend with the needs of the African-American community. And as much as that is coded language in the sense that, like, talking about urban issues is supposed to code that we're talking about Black people and
right.
that these are not, like, that this is, like, not, like, there's not really a connection to be had there, I feel like that is what Republicans want to hear from.
Probably, yes.
You know,
I think,
they
want
to hear, like, well, these are voters
right.
that live by and large in cities and things are going badly for them. So let's connect it to Democratic leadership in large urban areas because it's always Democratic there.
Yeah.
But again, this is a man who's polling sometimes 0% with Black voters.
It's also a man who can't, you know, spit out a coherent thought either. So
I mean,
for him to be able to take a complex issue and then distill it down for people in a way that they can understand it and then potentially be like, oh, yes, that makes sense. I will vote for you now. That's not an ability that he has.
No. No, and also, he doesn't seem to have the ability to address any voters without insulting them in the process.
That's very true.
Remember when he found his African-American at a rally?
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Remember his African-American?
Uh-huh.
But this is like to begin a conversation with a large, a diverse, economically diverse group demographic by talking about how everyone is poor is not it.
It's not.
That's not it. Nope. Hilariously, also, his other problem is that his surrogates, like, just do not know how to speak about this issue.
Oh, my God. This is hilarious. This quote's
so
genius.
First of all, one of his senior advisors, Jack Kingston, was asked on CNN why he decided to reach out to black voters at a rally that was in a white community filled with white people.
That had only white people.
And Kingston said, maybe it would have been nice if he went and had a backdrop with a burning car. His it's like some LA riots imagery right there. Rallies are open to the public. Last night in North Carolina, we saw a lot of African Americans. I wasn't sure about the crowd content tonight, but they're open to the public. And I mean, there's nothing exclusive. The reality is, what he's saying is, I want to talk to you. But we should note that they're not so open to the public that people of color can go to them because an Indian American 18-year-old was kicked out of one just this week.
You know, and he has been invited to speak at all of the, you know, somebody pointed this out on some show I was watching, I can't remember. You know, the presidential candidates always get invited to go speak at the NAACP. They of get course. At, any of these other groups.
I'm sure that
like,
black voters would love to hear from him.
I'm sure they would, too, if not just for comedy's sake.
Right, exactly. Let's hear him twist himself into a pretzel for an hour while we ask him questions about
the
black community.
You know, he can't just say things like this. Even if these would have been coherent thoughts,
right?
I still wouldn't consider it outreach because he's not.
No, I mean
do you know what I mean? Like the fact that they were racist comments is just, expected.
Right. It's like secondary to the problem of him not really having done any outreach.
Right. Even if they would have been less racist thoughts,
right,
and would have actually been sort of like, oh, well, that makes a moderate amount of sense. It isn't all he needs to be doing.
It is interesting because generally Republicans are good at messaging. And I felt like he does have a pitch to make to black voters. It is a pitch where he doesn't mention a lot of what he is saying. But it's the same pitch that a lot of people that I have heard that are Trump supporters are hearing. That is, for some reason, they can ignore the racism and they can ignore the vitriol and they can ignore the fact that he's insane, obviously, and unstable. And they can hear just one thing. I've heard more people say to me, well, it's the reason I'm supporting him is because he's consistent than I would care to admit. But I mean, this is a candidate who's the least consistent person in America.
I know.
He's found ways to be on weird sides of issues where I didn't know those sides existed. But like, he, as a person who is kind of like oversimplifying the point, has a pitch to make to black voters.
Sure.
He has a pitch to make to black voters because he has a pitch to make to working class voters and he has a pitch to make to middle class voters. And it's not a great pitch. But I mean, this is like the pitch that he needed to make was about.
Was a simple pitch about
economic
jobs,
opportunity
right,
and jobs.
Correct. Yes.
And education.
Agreed.
You know, like there was a simple pitch to make there.
Yeah.
He didn't have to start the pitch by talking about how terrible the black community is.
Right.
And he didn't have to end the pitch by having his surrogates act as if what doing outreach to the black community is doing outreach in a tire-burning riot.
Yeah. Right.
You know, like that, like those two implications are what is preventing him from getting to the lame pitch that he has to make.
Right.
Because this is a pitch. Republicans always try to make a pitch to voters of color.
Right.
It's not a good one.
No.
It's not that voters of color can't see through it.
Yeah.
It's just that they try. And it's like, it's the genteel racism pitch. It's the pitch where you don't mention the racism. You just mention the pitch, you know, like, and he didn't achieve that.
No, he
didn't. Then hilariously, Kellyanne Conway, his new campaign manager,
who is as white as
one of the whiter people out there, was on George Stephanopoulos, or was talking to George Stephanopoulos, and
she was really moved by it.
Yeah.
Really moved.
Was asked about these comments, and she said, these comments are for all Americans, and I live in a white community. I'm white. I was very moved by his comment. In other words, he's trying to tell Americans that we can do better. Then she again went on to quote that 58% statistic that has been debunked.
Right.
But it's
hilarious.
Hilarious.
White people were really moved.
White
by
people
his,
very moved by his speech to
by his
insulting
speech
to black people. We love it when our candidate says insulting things to black people. It's nice to see a candidate who's willing to say horrible things to black people.
Yeah,
because
that's what we're looking for in a candidate.
Because that's what we're looking
that's
for.
That's moving.
That's
to
moving
me.
To us.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like that's not it. God. But so like he like. I understand that he only did this because the GOP has been telling him to do it,
that
and
had,
it
right.
boggles my mind why they told him to do this in the first place.
Right.
Like, I don't know what their plan was for this.
Do you think that he just fucked it up so bad intentionally so he was like...
They were like, never mind, white people only. We're just... We gotta find all the white people.
Right, exactly. Like, get off my case. This isn't the black thing isn't working.
Right.
The Mexican thing isn't working.
We gotta find the white people.
Right, just all of them.
Yeah, just round up all the white people and make them cast votes for a racist.
Okay, here's something terrifying. Donald Trump got his first classified briefing.
That is
week.
Not what you're looking for.
It's not.
I look
all.
Forward to finding out what's in a classified briefing because I'm sure we will.
I was going to say, he'll tell us. It can only stay classified for so long.
Exactly. This was something, what I didn't know from this was it was not until Truman got elected that they started doing this. He did it for Eisenhower. That was the first time. And it was because Truman came into office.
Didn't know about the atom bomb.
I
know. Didn't know about like the Manhattan Project
that's crazy.
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah. And so,
What?
Eisenhower didn't want to take it. Truman was like, no, listen.
I got some stuff to tell you.
You have to listen. But this is such a weird year because everyone is claiming everyone's so untrustworthy.
I know, because the Democrats are obviously like, okay, Trump is too crazy and too brash to like begin these things. And we'll like
the
just
whole
say
premise
when,
of them hating Hillary Clinton is supposedly that she released classified information.
Right, exactly. So it's like, I mean, we are literally in a presidential election where like both parties think the other one, we're not even talking about qualified to run the country.
No.
We're talking about
qualified to
sit in a room and to listen to somebody tell them things. Like, that's what we're arguing about right now.
This is sad.
It's really
this
sad.
This is not, like, as much, like, I didn't want Mitt Romney to be the president. I
would trust him with this information.
I would trust him with classified information,
though. I wouldn't trust
him
to take the information
and
then
do the right
make
thing.
The right choices
no.
with them. But I would trust that, like, it would
to
be,
blow
like,
our
general.
Cover.
Right, exactly. I know. Seriously.
Like, I would trust him to act responsibly with the information.
Right.
In that he wouldn't tell everyone.
Right.
I mean, this is going to be.
Or send an email about it from his Gmail account.
Exactly.
Tweet
it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, it's okay because the world's ending anyway, because this was the hottest month ever on record.
Ever. Not this year, not in the last...
July.
Right, exactly.
July, which was too hot, as you recall.
It was so hot.
It was so fucking hot.
It was really hot right now. I'm sweating and the air conditioning is
I know,
running.
It's too hot
too
now.
Hot.
It's been too hot for months, literally.
Yeah.
But that's because it's the hottest month ever on
that's
record.
Right. Yeah.
I'm going to have to go back to the East Coast if this keeps up.
Right.
It's not cold enough here.
No, I know. And if we needed further proof that climate change is real, other than July being the hottest month in the history of Earth.
We also have unprecedented flooding in Louisiana.
There were a few other stories because we're not going to talk specifically about it, but also California's burning to the ground.
Oh, yeah. It's like every time I look up, there's like smoke in the sky and ash falling on my head.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean...
So, anyway, but Louisiana is mostly underwater now from what I can tell.
I mean, the whole state seems to have disappeared under a puddle.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like,
they got what was it?
Yeah, like, they got 31 inches of rain in 15 hours.
In 15 hours. And that is why, like, this turned into, like, such a giant clusterfuck. Because, like, people knew that they were going to be having, like, there were flash flood warnings. There were, you know, people were saying, oh, I got enough food to be in my house for a week.
But, like,
you know,
how
because,
often
like, but they weren't prepared to, like, having
to... a flash flood is going to cause you to canoe out of your
house?
Right,
they weren't thinking that they were going to have to canoe out of their home within literally the day.
Yeah.
So that is sort of...
So stockpiling food isn't a great solution
when
you're going to have to take all of your worldly items and
canoe
out of your house.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, that is just crazy. 31 inches in 15 hours.
That
is
too many
inches. And that was... And it kept raining. It's not as if it was 15 hours and then it stopped.
No.
So that was just sort of like
the
bulk of like the...
That was just the biggest bulk of the rain.
Right.
No, it's wild. It's the worst... It's been declared the worst natural disaster since Sandy.
Yeah.
It's not gotten much coverage in media because it was really, I think because it was so shocking. It really took everyone by surprise.
Also, I heard something interesting that the governor said this morning. I heard an interview with him. He was also like, it's not as buzzy because it's flooding and floods don't have names.
Yes.
Which I thought was interesting.
Wait.
It sounded stupid initially, and then I thought about it, and I was like,
no,
it's true.
You can't hashtag flood.
We haven't branded this flood in
we
a way.
We branded Hurricane Katrina. Hurricane Sandy. Those were hurricanes.
They were hurricanes, and they had
and then
names,
you
and everybody's
associate
like, oh,
them
my
with
God,
floods.
Hurricane Sandy. But, like, just, oh, this is...
The random Louisiana flood.
Right, exactly.
It's not buzzy at all. I think that's actually a really,
right?
a really thoughtful way of thinking about
because
it.
Because apparently they have much less volunteers than they had during... Katrina.
Right.
They have a lot. They are, the Red Cross has said that they are underfunded for what they're trying to do right now because people aren't giving to them. Usually, you know, there's like a text something, something, something
text
and give
$10
to whatever. Like, that's not happening here. So, like, that's sad. We should be doing better on that front. But
also,
yeah,
we should be diverting enough resources from
our
tax dollars to take care of it.
And he claims that we're doing that. I mean,
he
says that the federal government has been great and that FEMA was down there when they were supposed to be and that things
that
are happening. But it's gonna take time and it's gonna take, they're saying right now, at least
$30 million.
And
also,
but
these are the kinds of situations that I always return to the call for some social programs that pick up the slack in a situation like
this.
Where if you have national health care, then the Red Cross doesn't, the Red Cross needs to be there for like triage.
Yes.
But they don't need to be there. It's not like where people are still living in FEMA trailers from Hurricane Katrina and don't have access, you know, are like not getting services easily. And we're having to suddenly provide services to people who right. don't have services. Like if we have the infrastructure for all of this, then we can like go and take care of disaster victims in the long term.
Right.
Because the problem with situations like this is not just the property damage. It creates sort of like endemic victims.
Yes, exactly. You know, like because these are people who, you know, many of these people...
When you lose your home, you lose your home.
Right.
It's not always people who can just buy a new one. And correct. Their whole community is now underwater, so their community is going to be destroyed.
Right.
The roads in their community is going to be destroyed. You know, right. the kinds of damage that we see are going to be some things that are going to be carried out over years. It's not going to be...
Just on a short-term level, these people aren't... They're not working right now, exactly. obviously, like you would think anyway. I mean, like... And these are... A lot of these people you would expect are people who are... Probably living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
I mean...
It's Louisiana. It's one of the worst states in the
union. Right. I mean, they're living off of our tax dollars here in California. So,
exactly.
I mean, certainly, you know... And that's, I would be and that's happy not to say I don't feel bad for all of these people, because I certainly do. Nobody deserves this.
I'm also happy to
this,
have
but,
my tax dollars go to relieving them of flood conditions. I would be totally, even happier
yes.
if my tax dollars were going to deliver them from the long-term after effects of these
correct.
Flood conditions, which I think a lot of the time we
don't
can't.
Do.
We don't have the infrastructure to do what we could.
Yeah.
In any case,
exactly.
this is a pretty big flood.
Right, and nobody really knows that, you know, the waters are still going down. A lot of people are not back in their homes.
Yeah, there's still 7,000 people in shelters.
Right, exactly. The governor said that, like, 40,000 homes suffered like at least some damage, but people aren't going to know whether they're going to be able to keep
right.
their homes until they can actually
go in
until it's out from underwater, which is truly what has happened. Like
yeah.
if you see
and
these pictures, you see like roofs, you know, poking out over.
Yeah,
water.
No, it looks like Katrina.
So
I mean, it looks just like Katrina, except this was not the result of a levee breaking.
Right.
This is literally just water that fell from the sky.
Weather.
Yeah. It's just water from the sky.
Yikes.
Trump God. Went in there though and had a solution.
He had a plan. One of the few plans that he's had
That's
that was
right.
like a.
This is a Trumpian style plan, if ever there was one.
He had a clear thing that he was going to go down
there
and do.
Get the kids some Play-Doh, get out of there.
Get the fuck there. That's right. Not be with the, you know, certainly
he just
not do anything
productive
with the common people of Louisiana. He wasn't
going to
do anything of that. He was going to carry a box of Play-Doh.
Sure.
He was going to hand it to someone, and then he was going to leave.
Yes. So he got the photo. He went to Louisiana. He was in a photo being in Louisiana. Holding Play-Doh.
Right.
And then he got the fuck out of there.
He did actually leave some other things. But there was the Play-Doh meme was making the rounds, which is, of course. But, you know, and the governor said that he... Well, the governor didn't say he didn't want him to come because he got a lot of flack for that. A lot of people were like, oh, you can't say that you don't want him to come down. What he said was I hope it doesn't turn into a photo op.
Right.
And so then everybody immediately was like, oh, the governor says don't come down here for a photo op, which is not what he said.
No.
He said,
but also,
I hope
don't
it
go
turn
down there
into that.
Just for a photo op.
Right, which is exactly
the president
what he did.
Didn't even go down there because he didn't want
no.
to cause
now, that's
chaos.
A whole other can of worms.
That situation is really.
Yeah.
Mike Huckabee's pissed.
So
Mike Huckabee,
mad.
Who is an irrelevant figure to this conversation,
to this
is real fucking
Mike
angry.
Mike Huckabee is now ultimately an irrelevant figure, like
to
in
the world's
life.
Conversation.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was railing about Obama not ending his vacation early and heading down to Louisiana.
Right.
Now,
he said it's a dereliction of duty and it's disgraceful.
That's right. The governor actually stuck up for Obama because
right.
Obama was apparently holding off going because he didn't want to have to divert the kinds of resources that you have to. When the president comes, you have a lot of security detail to suddenly
right.
deal with. You have to take care of the president.
Yeah, exactly.
They didn't want to divert first responder resources
right.
towards the president when there was a flood going on and people
living
were dying.
Living in California, we know what a presidential motorcade looks like.
We
and
sure
we
do.
We know how many police officers are with
it's
them.
Too
we
many.
Know all this. It's like, you know, you literally...
It
and
is
all
too
of those,
many.
And those people had better things to do than point with the president at, you know, homes that were underwater.
Exactly.
There were still people who were
needed to get
potentially
rescued
dying
out of those homes.
Right.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So he's going to go down on Tuesday now.
Yes.
He, was called out also by Baton Rouge's paper, The Advocate,
yes.
for not being down there. But I think he probably knows what he's doing because there's been too many of these.
What I will say
catastrophic
is that
environmental events.
There has yes, exactly. And the one thing that I will say is that there has been a lot of talk about the, you know, people got really mad when George Bush didn't go down there right after Katrina. So I think a lot of people are
right,
as, much
like,
as,
no
to, as much as I hate to admit it, I feel like the double standard is maybe there.
Sure.
here.
Yeah.
But anyway, regardless, I get why.
Yeah.
And this is the same thing that George Bush said after he didn't go down there as well. Right. He said that he didn't want to divert resources.
I would imagine that
what
that's
I would contend
actually...
is they weren't. They didn't have any fucking resources
well, I was
down there
say,
because FEMA was such a fucking
this
disaster,
whole time
excuse my language. And
has
like,
been like a real distinction from Katrina
right.
in many ways. And
because
one
the
of them
federal government
is that,
has actually been helping here,
exactly.
where in the case of Katrina, they weren't doing a damn thing.
And part of the reason that you ask for a president to go down there, if there's not enough resources, is so that someone can marshal the troops
right.
and like tell people, like
well,
figure
and,
out how to get the resources down there. You need them to be like, no, wait, this
right.
is not okay.
Right.
And sometimes if you're an idiot president, you need your eyes to see
right.
that.
Well, and right, because within hours of taking the phone call from the governor on whatever day it was that this flooding first started happening, he had declared a state of emergency.
Exactly.
The Coast Guard is down there rescuing people from their homes. FEMA is down there,
right.
you know,
like
putting
are...
people in shelters. It's not as if the federal government isn't doing any
the
their
issue
job.
With
and I would also contend, and I say this a lot, when people complain about presidents coming home for vacation, the president can do his job from basically
anywhere. Yeah.
And he was also at, wasn't he at Martha's Vineyard? That's
yeah.
basically like where presidents go to. It's like a second White House anyway
right.
at that point. Like, I mean, it's not as if he was.
Yeah, George Bush
the
spent his entire presidency in Texas.
Right, I know. He hadn't gone off the grid.
No, yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
he was reachable by,
via
phone.
Email.
Or any of the people who were probably there with him annoying his family on vacation because
exactly.
you can't go on an actual vacation with the president. So,
no.
I mean, it was a working vacation, guys. You know?
It's interesting to hear comparisons between Bush's Katrina and this for so many reasons. But I will say that one of the things that I think we're getting down as a nation is because we have so many more environmental disasters than we used to. It's like we're getting
That's,
better at handling them.
I know, right?
I mean, one of the issues with Katrina was not just that we were unprepared and we'd been living in a Republican government, so we'd gutted all of our resources.
Right.
But it was that...
That was part
we,
of it.
I mean, that was definitely part of it. But we also, like, that was a very unprecedented situation. We had never had that kind of a
right.
flood happen that quickly
right.
in an area that was so underserved by services.
Right.
And it was like no one thought that was a possibility, so we didn't do the right thing,
right.
in part.
We'd also never had a person running FEMA who was involved in horses.
So
either.
True.
So, you know,
yeah.
I mean,
it's so many questions.
So many things were unprecedented about
So many
about
things were unprecedented about that. But I mean, like, I'm glad to see that the kinds of resources that needed to get there quickly did, because
yeah.
that is not something that we can say for any of the previous major floods that
right.
we've had. So that's good news.
Yes, it is. Yes. The
best
favorite,
news.
the best news that came from the flooding, because obviously the flooding is tragic.
Yes.
Was
except
Tony,
in one instance.
Except for one specific home that got flooded.
Right.
We're super into.
Yeah.
And I, you know, sorry about it.
We're
not better than this. Exactly. Tony Perkins, who is the head of the Family Research Council, has claimed many times before that the reason that we have natural disasters
right.
is due in large part
because of gays.
Because of gays. Abortion and gays.
Yeah. Gays and abortion are visiting destruction upon many a home
Correct.
In many a country.
That's right. In 2015, he had on, he interviewed this guy who suggested that Hurricane Joaquin, which was devastated the Bahamas, was a sign of God's wrath against abortion and the Supreme Court's historic ruling on same-sex marriage.
By the way, this was like one of those like nutso rabbis.
Oh, yeah,
it?
Yeah.
It was, it was like, he's not a rabbi. He's like
right.
a Jewish pastor. He's
right.
like
the
a
right.
Jews for Jesus,
yes.
right?
Right, uh-huh.
Yeah.
yeah. So anyway,
so it was like wackadoodle people.
Right, exactly. So on Tuesday, Perkins announced that he and his family had to escape their Louisiana home in a canoe over the weekend because of the state's floods. Now,
he
didn't blame
was not about
interestingly
gays.
On the gays.
No. Well, because if it was this was a punishment on him.
Correct.
He couldn't connect that to the gays.
No, he couldn't.
This is the past hurricanes and floods have been they've been caused by gays, but they've also been to affect gays. Like, gays are both are the cause of these disasters, but
right.
also the victims of them.
Right. Well, Hurricane Sandy, I mean,
we're learning a lesson about what it is to live, you know, what it is to allow gay people to be alive in your society.
Yeah.
You'll get a hurricane
yeah.
and it'll flood you out of your home.
Yeah. But
this one couldn't be about that.
No, his quote this time, he said that the floods had been sent as an incredible, encouraging spiritual exercise to take you to the next level in your walk with an almighty and gracious God who does all things well.
Nothing gracious about a God that visits destruction upon you at every turn, but okay.
Oh,
his God is an alarming God.
Whatever you need to tell
angry.
Yourself at night, Tony
Perkins.
Yeah.
whatever
keep,
that is.
Keep doing you.
Don't keep doing you. Well, yeah. Tell yourself that from your canoe, because if anyone deserved the retribution of a flood suddenly visiting upon you,
yeah,
it was you.
Yeah.
Oh, some exciting news, guys.
The Green Party had a candidate forum on CNN. You guys, I watched it.
We
Can
did
I tell
it.
You? I got home on Friday, ultimately, mm-hmm. late Thursday right. night, and worked on Friday. I don't know why I did that, by
yeah,
the way. Everybody was like, what are you doing back here? And I'm like, I don't know. I went on a vacation from Friday to Thursday, and then went, got back late Thursday night, and then went to the office on Friday morning.
It's like,
what the hell? What am I like a you're stupid? Am I
wrong
an actual
in the
idiot?
Head.
I know.
You're
I'm
wrong
touching
in the
my head right now, which is why,
yeah.
why I said wrong in the head.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I hadn't. Yesterday, I was bound and determined that I already mentioned that I watched 4 hours of Men's Diving.
Right.
I was going to watch
all
Men's Diving. I was going to watch 2 episodes of Bachelor in Paradise.
Oh,
I was going to watch. I was going to watch Big Brother. I was going to watch just
all
I
the
was
worst
gonna, like,
things.
Dump out on the
yeah.
couch. But you want to know what I watched before all of those other things?
Because you're a responsible citizen.
Fired up the CNN app on my Apple TV
mm-hmm.
and watched the Green Party
candidate
forum.
And you had watched some of the Libertarian, the Gary Johnson one
oh,
too,
yeah,
right?
I watched all that one.
This is the first time ever that CNN is giving any cable news.
I
wasn't going to say not the opposite of short shrift. It's still
right.
short shrift, but it's not shrift free.
Right. No, it's not.
To any of the third party candidates. And it's very exciting.
Well, and it's what's so exciting to me is that and it's so great that CNN is doing this because, you know, you get locked into this world of thinking that there are 2 different answers to a problem.
Right.
It's the Republican answer and the Democratic answer. Sometimes they're the same answer. Sometimes they're diametrically
right.
different. But you don't...
Sometimes you're like, can this possibly be the only answer?
Right. And it isn't. And I think that, like, we learned that in the Libertarian town hall. Now,
right.
I disagreed with most of the
yeah.
wackiness
well,
that they were
Well, the thing about Libertarians
spewing.
Is we disagree with 50% of what they think, and
right,
we
exactly.
wholeheartedly agree with 50% of
right,
what they think.
Exactly.
And that's so weird.
And
that's so confusing.
Yeah. But you... I think that Americans don't understand that there are also other ideas.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
like, you don't even, it's not even that you know that you disagree with one of them. It's that you don't even know that they exist.
Yeah. No, and I think a lot of the time, you know, we talked a lot about this during the Sanders campaign, is a lot of the time an idea can't become a political reality until someone has mentioned it in the political
Correct.
Process. Single payer won't happen if we don't talk about single
right.
payer.
Exactly.
You know, we'll think Obamacare is the only answer. And it's
right.
because we don't hear the word single payer. No one has been like, you know what we could do?
Right.
Because everyone has, before you say the word, everyone's like, that's not possible. We can't talk about
right.
it.
Right, exactly.
And this is the kind of mentality that stops us from having real change.
Yeah.
You know, when people say that they're voting for Donald Trump because Hillary Clinton doesn't offer change, Donald Trump doesn't offer the right kind of change
no.
or much change
at
all.
There is somebody who does.
But there are candidates who do. And these ideas should be part of the discussion, at least.
Right.
Because they aren't viable unless they're part of the discussion. There is
right.
no one in Congress who has any incentive to you know, absorb any of these ideas if they're
yeah.
not in the discussion and voters don't
yeah.
care about them.
Yeah.
So that's why it's so important to allow third-party candidates to be a
yeah.
part of the process.
Yeah. And I think she did a really good job, actually. I mean, she's not
she's,
an idiot.
No,
mean, she's
exactly.
a doctor. She's well-spoken. I mean, she ran in 2012. She's getting much more exposure this time around.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
but
you
she's
know,
also
she
been
good...
active in
oh,
green
yeah.
politics
yeah,
since 1998,
right,
I think.
Exactly.
You know, she's
yeah.
she's someone who has been part of the political process,
right.
especially on the third-party circuit, for a while
right.
in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
So she's...
I think that
we're
going
to release a Meet the Candidates for her, by the way,
yeah,
soon.
We are.
So get ready
but
for
I
that.
But I think that, you know, the obvious question that everyone wants to ask, I have so many people who just like hate her, you know, like
yeah.
on Facebook and things like that, because they
yeah.
think that she's going to, you
well,
know,
it's part of
they
the
think
same,
that she's, it's this, the
it's
whole
the
Ralph
Nader,
Nader
dichotomy.
The Nader thing, which is, you know,
it's
whatever.
A false
but,
comparison.
You know, people.
Also,
and
that's a false idea.
It's a false
it's
idea.
It's a false everything.
Right. It's all of it.
It's
wrong.
All false.
We've said enough about it on this podcast,
yeah.
or you can. You know, just do your own research.
Tweet at
and
us
not be
if
an
you
idiot.
Need us to
but,
explain more.
Right, exactly. But, you know, she, of course, the first question out of the gate was, will you be able to sleep at night if you're able to, if you're the person who helps get Donald
yeah.
Trump elected? And I think her answer is great. Because she says, I will have trouble sleeping if Donald Trump is elected. I will also have trouble sleeping at night if Hillary Clinton is elected.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point here. That's why 60% of the country
exactly.
wants another option.
Exactly.
Because nobody wants to sleep at night with either of these two people
no.
as the president.
And no one sleeping is the...
Yeah.
No one wants to sleep.
Right. Well, and I also
situation.
Think that she
yeah.
rightly notes that, you know, as despicable as Donald Trump's words are, I'm quoting her here, yeah. as despicable as Donald Trump's words are, I find Hillary Clinton's actions and track record is as troubling.
Yeah.
And that's important, I think. You know, we have things right. to look at that Hillary Clinton has done that right. have been terrible.
Yeah. Right. I mean, and the idea that we, like, her not being, like, an unstable, crazy person
right.
doesn't mean that she is immune from right. our criticism as voters who have to live with the policy that she right. enacts. You know, like,
yeah.
that the idea, and that's, you know, that's kind of the basis here, is yeah. without a way of sort of holding her accountable, because right. Donald Trump, voting for Donald Trump isn't holding anyone accountable.
Sure
is. Destroying the world. But, right. like, without a way to hold her accountable,
yeah.
we aren't even part of the discussion anymore.
Right,
this is
exactly.
like, she's going to appoint Ken Salazar to be her fucking, you know, transition team leader, and we're right. going to have fracking in the TPP, and we're not in the discussion.
Right,
and exactly. we are in the discussion if there's a candidate who is in the discussion about those ideas.
Yeah.
And that is why you need a candidate in the
yeah,
discussion.
Exactly.
It's not destroying America to to try to challenge her on ideas that doesn't that where she doesn't represent her voters.
Right, exactly.
It's crazy.
Stein also highlighted on multiple occasions that she's the only one of the four candidates running who is not taking any corporate money.
Right. Go after those Sanders people where you can.
Right, exactly. So that yeah. was obviously to go after Sanders voters. My favorite question was one about feminism.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually made me think of your mom, because one of her, I still live for your mom's haikus.
Oh yeah. Well, everyone
but,
does.
Like
yeah.
one of them was, and I can't even remember what it was, but like, it was something like,
yeah, she had a haiku about this.
Yeah. It was like, if electing, you know, something about electing the first woman president, like, are we really electing the first woman president if she's into
or the first feminist,
president, if she's into man things like war and stuff right. like that, like was basically the crux right. of your mother's haiku. I just, you know, butchered.
Well,
it was
like, almost like exactly what Jill Stein says here, where she basically yeah. talks about how it's not feminist. If part of being a feminist is not just caring about your own family, but caring
correct.
About all families. Like, being a feminist right. is about thinking everyone deserves a shot and is equal.
Right.
That includes other families.
Right, exactly. She said, and this is a quote, she said, "The war effort that Hillary has especially been the engine behind, to my mind, that's just not compatible with my view of what feminism is. That has a responsibility, not just to your own family, but to all families and to the human family."
Yeah.
So...
And I think that's well, and it really challenges Clinton on the one sort of like human interest issue, if you will, that she really prides herself on.
Right.
Clinton is famous for her work with children
with
and families.
Children.
Mothers and children.
Right.
And if she is someone who is so dedicated to children in
right.
America and is
why
comfortable
is big,
murdering children abroad, you know, then that is an incompatible
yeah.
kind of idea
yeah.
to have in
yeah.
your head.
But some of the new ideas that, if you aren't familiar with Jill Stein, that she is talking about that are interesting, she's calling for a, quote, peace offensive
right,
in the Middle
East. Right, that's a
hippie-dippy
term
it's
for it.
It's a
hippie
term.
She should
I don't
come up
really
with a different way of saying
that.
It. That doesn't sound legitimate, but it's a good
agree.
Idea.
It's a good idea, yes. Which basically includes an embargo on weapon sales and a freeze on funding to states that support jihadi terrorist enterprises, pointing to Saudi Arabia specifically.
Right. She doesn't have any personal friends there, I assume, so that would help.
Right, exactly. You know, but I mean, I think that is basically what she said. It was like, you know, we've been bombing terrorists for...
Right.
You know,
and we've been
and
arming
also,
them.
And also building up terrorists, too.
Exactly.
I mean,
we've been arming
know,
them and then bombing
right,
them
exactly.
and then arming them again.
We've built up terrorist groups, you know, as, you know, far back in the, you know, in the 80s and 90s because we wanted them to take on the Russians
we funded
in
the
Middle
the Taliban.
East. You know what I mean? And we funded the Taliban. So, like, what her point is, and I think that it's the only right point. I mean,
yeah.
like, I'm with her here. I'm also with you. Don't call it a peace offensive.
But right,
like,
yeah.
You know,
no, but I mean,
the
idea is the right idea.
The bombing isn't working. The idea
no.
is the right idea. She also called for a massive cut in military spending, including the closure of most military bases. She
right.
said all unless sort of like in extreme,
right.
you know, places where we felt like we needed them. But like, that's huge. She also wants to shut down the F-35 program and not move forward with the modernization of the U.S. nuclear weapons program, which also,
why
are we doing that?
Why are we doing that?
Right?
We already have these hugely destructive weapons. Like, why do they need to be more destructive?
Yeah.
They're too destructive
yeah.
already.
So that's like an idea that you're not hearing from anybody.
Yeah. yeah. And the thing is, if you don't agree with it, great.
Right.
It's an idea that's out there.
Right.
It's an option. We
yes.
can talk about the validity of it
right.
when we know it. But
it's
we don't even get to talk about the validity
no.
of it if we have two warmonger presidents.
Correct.
Because I don't care what people say about Donald Trump. A, it's been debunked that he was against the Iraq war from the beginning.
Right.
And B, the man has already actively questioned why we're not using nuclear weapons.
Nuclear
more.
Weapons.
He's
on
a warmonger president.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And so if when you have two warmonger...
Oh, he would love to go to war just
to
for
to everyone.
Shits and giggles.
Yeah. To look tough. To win.
Yeah.
But I like these are this is at least an idea.
Right.
That we are not hearing as an option in any place. And it will never be policy if it's not an option.
Right.
If, you know, if no one ever says it, it can't happen.
Yeah.
That's just how things work.
Yeah.
So, like, it is an important part of the foreign policy political discussion. I think also a lot of people act like pacifists are like some like idealistic crazy people who don't know things about things.
Right.
And this, I think she has like a fairly informed view. She's obviously going to get called a hippie nonsense talker.
Of course.
Because, you know, these are fairly dramatic proposals.
Right.
But I mean, she understands that there are dangers in the world. She understands that with those dangers come certain responsibilities that you don't necessarily like. She understands that the world is the world.
Right.
It is. She is doing what Sanders does. She's offering her sort of like her absolutist idea so that that's a starting point for a discussion.
Correct.
That we can have about what parts of that idea might actually be worth adopting.
Correct.
You know, that is all that you're really looking for in a political discussion. That is what we wish Hillary Clinton did better, because
she goes straight
for the compromise. And we wish Obama. Yeah, exactly. Right. She goes straight for the compromise. Obama often goes straight for the compromise. And they never talk about, because of that, the sort of radical ideas where you could take a few things from them never even get aired.
No.
So this is just like, this is not an idea that you're hearing anywhere. And it's an option for dealing with a very scary world where what we're doing now isn't working. It's only getting scarier.
Yeah. Another option that she's into, and this has been a huge part of her platform because she's also using it as a way to try and make inroads with young people.
Right.
But is she wants the federal government to erase student debt.
Yeah.
She wants them to forgive student debt.
Like, not just think of debt-free education options, but to take the people that are currently in debt and forgive them
on their debt. Forgive the debt. Which, have the Treasury Department basically just like, she talks about like quantitative easing or something, but basically what we did for the banks.
Yeah. Which is, we could, like, when people act like this is economically not feasible, I'm always like, why was it feasible to do it for large corporations then?
Well, and that's the thing. And I think that the reason why so many young people are disillusioned right now is that, you know, young people paid into college with the expectation that they were going to have a job.
Yeah. And then, a job that paid a living.
And then the banks and Wall Street crashed the economy, and then they were the ones that got bailed out. And then there weren't any jobs.
Right,
and they were like, wait a minute, I just paid.
Wait, I made an investment too. It shouldn't have been a risky investment to get an education.
I'm in more debt than any generation has ever been in the history of this country.
Yeah.
And you just bailed out the people who fucked me?
Yeah.
So like, this is another thing that people will see as like a crazy wacko idea.
Yeah.
But like, why? Why does it have to be a crazy wacko idea?
We have a lot of fucking money.
Right?
We're really fucking rich. You know who could afford to forgive a lot of this debt? The private corporations that are holding it.
True. That's also true.
I mean, it's because it's like, these are the banks that hold the debt are some of the banks that the American debt is held by banks that we bailed out.
Yeah, I agree.
Is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, exactly. I know.
So there's a direct connection. It's not just a hippy dippy nonsense talking point.
Exactly.
There's a direct connection.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, I highly recommend that you watch both of these because
the Gary Johnson and the Jill Stein
one and the Jill Stein one, because like they're interesting. Like if you like politics, which you obviously do because you're listening to this podcast,
or you just love us
or just love us, like they're fascinating.
Yeah.
So anyway, good work, CNN.
Yeah. Well, this is the first time that we've seen a cable news network give really any time to any third party candidates. And I think this is an important year to do it because our two options are not options.
Yeah, they're garbage options.
Anymore. Like, these are not real options.
Yeah.
In other news that's just media news, but it's important to note because this is a news source that offers you the same entree into politics as a gossip item that I think we do.
Yes, exactly.
Gawker is shutting down.
We love Gawker.
We love Gawker. And it's Gawker has published some irresponsible shit.
Sure.
I don't care. Gawker is funny and they're snarky. And it is a problem for me if people on personal vendettas if billionaires with personal vendettas can crash media or can bankrupt media sites to the degree that they have to go out of business.
And that's the problem, because Gawker was, you know, as you said, sure, they did some questionable things and whatever. But I mean, they were a news site.
Yeah.
And they were attempting to do journalism.
And they were attempting to do some investigative journalism.
And the reason that they are having to shut down is because of this.
It's Peter Thiel.
Hogan.
Hulk Hogan,
But, right, Hulk Hogan. But it was ultimately, Peter Thiel, who who was
held
funding,
onto this grudge for years.
Right, exactly, because they, what did they do to him? They did something to him 10 years ago. Oh, they outed him 10 years ago.
Peter Thiel, you might remember as the one gay speaker at the RNC this year who talked about spaceships or something.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. The PayPal guy or something,
yeah,
right? He's,
yeah.
So he's like a rich person.
Right.
And then Gawker released something about, wasn't it like a Hulk
on
Valleywag? Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Peter Thiel got outed by Valleywag, which is a site that has since gone out of business.
It doesn't even exist anymore.
Then there was the Hulk Hogan situation was separate, but Peter Thiel...
Peter Thiel
funded the court case.
And then basically was able to, they won that court case, and the amount of money that they were able to successfully sue for
bankrupted
Gawker.
Gawker. And Gawker Media owned a lot of different sites.
Right.
Jezebel is a Gawker site.
All of those actually have been bought by Univision.
Yes.
So Gawker Media has been bought by Univision, but Gawker.com is really only shutting down specifically because, like, they now feel like the Gawker.com brand is, it's a little toxic, which I don't really think it is. But like, website, you have to sell ad time or ad
being
dollars.
Being owned by Univision
like
is not being independent media anymore.
Well, no, it's very true.
Univision is owned by like NBC Universal.
Yes.
So
So they're just now, they're corporate media.
So now they're corporate media.
Right.
So it changes the whole, it means that if independent media can be bankrupted by a billionaire with a vendetta and can cease to be independent media after, then we have a problem our ability to report an ability to report on stories that may or may not be important at the time.
Right, exactly.
That, you know, and obviously this Valleywag story was stupid and it's too bad that they did that and that's what crashed their empire. They shouldn't have done it. But again, it was Valleywag that published the story. It was owned by Gawker Media. Gawker itself did not publish the story.
Right.
So the fact that they were crashed by just like dumb gossip from Silicon Valley is too bad.
Yep.
And we loved Gawker, so we're sorry about it.
Yeah, sure are.
I wish that they're...
I also love Jezebel, so I'm glad I can at least keep reading Jezebel.
Yeah, but Jezebel's going to have to change because it's going to become corporate, and Jezebel says shit about corporate media all the time that they're going to have to clean up their, not clean up their act, but they're going to have to sort of clean up how they report on things.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, I loved Defamer in its heyday.
Oh, sure.
And they tried to bring that back, and I think it failed. But, like, I would love there to be a kind of gossip site about Hollywood that considers itself both sort of, like, socially conscious and... Yeah. A gossip site?
Yeah.
Because news as gossip is what makes news interesting, you guys.
Yeah.
That's why we love news.
Right.
We don't love news because we want to be depressed all the time about how the world's going to hell in a handbasket. We love news because
it's
gossipy.
I was going to say, the news is our Kardashians.
It's the best gossip.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's too bad.
I agree.
that connection seems to destroy you.
Yeah.
Also, in a completely unrelated story that's happening in the tri-state area.
Yes. Chris Christie.
Nice connection there, right?
Yeah. Chris Christie doesn't want people to vote.
Don't vote in New Jersey. He doesn't want you to.
He doesn't want you to. He doesn't want you to be able to. He doesn't want you to be able to register. He doesn't want anything to do with voting. He's against voting.
They were considering a law similar to what we recently passed in California, where when you applied for a driver's license, you would automatically be registered to vote.
Yes.
Why?
Vetoed it.
Why any state should be in a position to make barriers to voting higher? Like, why are we even registering in the first place? That's a question.
Right, I know.
But once we... We have social security numbers. We know how to keep track of people.
Yes.
We know how many people live in America. Like, these are all things that... There's a way to keep track of citizens.
Yes.
You shouldn't have to present that information in order to vote because the whole point is that your vote can't be tracked to you.
Right.
But I don't understand why this registration option or this registration requirement exists. I've never understood it. And
the registration requirement should be being alive.
Exactly.
And 18.
And 18. Which... is what it is,
right?
In constitutionally speaking,
well, right, yeah, exactly.
The registration thing is like a workaround to like make sure that the Constitution doesn't actually apply to everyone.
Yeah,
but I mean the idea that we now have the ability and we know that states are doing this, so it's out there.
Yeah,
and not just states are doing this, but I think the federal government is starting to pursue making registration easier for people by automatically registering people.
There's a bill in Congress.
But so
and
why
Hillary Clinton has said that she's
yeah she's
that
in favor
Congress.
Of it.
Yeah.
Because voter fraud's not a problem here.
No, it's not. It never has been. And
it's
that's
never
what,
been.
You know, Christie called this bill a cocktail of fraud. And he also said the bill should have been called the Voter Fraud Enhancement and Permission Act. But we have proven time and time
like,
and time
the number
and
of
time
times we've proven it
that we don't have voter fraud. Because we always talk about this whenever any of the states are like, doing these whole voter ID things, which is what Donald Trump wants us to do, by the way. But, you know, and also a lot of these just got...
voter fraud
called
here.
Unconstitutional too. Yeah. I can't remember if we talked about it on the podcast, but there have been a lot of cases recently that have
Do you know how we prevent voter fraud? Because when you go to the election, when you go to the polling place, they have your name on a list. Yes. You sign next to your name,
right?
And then you don't have voter fraud.
That's right.
And if you aren't at your own polling place and you aren't on the list, you cast a provisional ballot.
Yes.
And then they look up and see if you have voted already. Right. We have a system to prevent voter fraud.
Which is why we
don't
have it.
And we have no instances of it to prevent.
Correct. Yeah.
So it's madness. The only voter fraud we have is fucking politicians trying to prevent people from voting.
Exactly. Now, he has a history of democracy hating because he also, he vetoed similar legislation last year. And in 2013, there was a bill to expand early voting, which he also vetoed. And
they tried to have one of those bills where you could have, if you were 17 for the primary, but 18 for the general, you could vote in the primary. He wanted none
vetoed
of that.
Vetoed that, too. Yeah.
So you can't choose your candidates if you're going to be 18 for the election.
No.
It's just madness. It makes me wonder what the atmosphere was like when they expanded voting to 18-year-olds. Because, you know, it used to be, the voting age used to be 21. My mom didn't get the right to vote until she was 21. And I think it was during the Vietnam War when they were like, we really can't ask people to be going
and
die for us.
Right.
And then not. But they, at the same time, raised the drinking age to 21.
Right.
Which was odd.
Yeah.
But so they switched those two, which is weird. But I wonder, like, what is a political climate like when they suddenly decide that it is imperative to expand voting rights?
Right.
I have never lived in that world, so I don't know what that's like.
I don't either.
And I'm interested.
Yeah.
If you are a person who remembers that moment in American history,
tell us about it.
Tell us about it. Send us an email. Yeah. It's just braintrustapproved@gmail.com is how you reach us.
Yeah.
Find us on Facebook. We're all over the place.
Yeah.
And final Trump news. We have two exciting stories for you.
They're both really good.
They're both really good.
By the way, Joy Reid, I've really been living for this election.
She's been doing it. She's doing the work.
Yeah, because she's not afraid to shut a bitch down.
Yeah, exactly.
she really isn't. But anyway, so she had on... Cortez. Yeah, Stephen Cortez, who's like he's a regular on CNBC, and he's a Republican, but he's also supporting Trump. And she was talking about... She had him on to talk about Trump cozying up with the alt-right.
The Breitbart crowd.
The Breitbart crowd. Yes, exactly. And she asked Cortez if he was comfortable being in the same camp with some of these people. She added, the Southern Poverty Law Center has described the Trump campaign bringing Breitbart's banner in as cozying up to the alt-right. And the explainer that Breitbart put up to explain who they are was written by a guy named Milo.
Yiannopoulos, or something.
Who is known as being sort of a guru to the alt-right. He's one of the people who hounded a comedian from Saturday Night Live off the internet with racist invective. They are white nationalists. Does that make you uncomfortable to be in the same camp with them? And his response was a real head-scratcher, doozy, whatever word you want to say.
Begins with, well, I would say they are nationalists. I wouldn't say they are white nationalists. And Milo, by the way, who you cite, is certainly the most known member of the alt-right. He's very provocative. He's also incredibly gay and very, very public about it.
He's incredibly
gay. He's not a racist because he's gay.
And Joy Reid said, does that mean he can't be a white nationalist? You say he can't be gay and a white nationalist because you can.
Being gay and being a white nationalist are unrelated points.
By the way, if he knows anything about the gay community, which he obviously doesn't because he said this quote, is that they're one of the things that... you know, the gay community takes a lot of knock for with, you know, from people within the community is that there's a lot of inherent racism within the gay community.
Well, and when I went on my many rants about gay marriage being the focus of the gay rights movement of the last decade or so, one of the points that I continuously talked about was that is a white gay person issue. It's not the primary issue facing gay people of color, and that I felt like that kind of erased their story a little bit. And you know, as much as that was kind of like just my own sort of intellectual anger about
it's real.
But it's a real issue in the sort of days where I think gays were so far outside the mainstream that they were relying on much more sort of activism, the ACT UP days.
Sure.
I just said ACT like 1,000 times. But I mean like the ACT UP days of the gay rights movement, they were very involved with the civil rights movement. They were very involved with other kinds of movements that we're talking about, civil rights of all kinds.
Because they had to be because they were so far out of the mainstream.
Because they were so far out of the mainstream. Right. And so because of that, their charge was really about finding not just ways for gays to access the same economic privileges as white America, but for gays to like be able to live in the world safely.
Right.
And that is still a problem for many gays of color, but it is not a problem for white gay men.
No.
Because soon as they got the right to marry, they became white men.
Right. Yes.
And then they could be white nationalists to their heart's content.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing stopping a white gay man from being a white nationalist. White gay men can certainly think that white people are the greatest people on the face of the earth.
Well, they obviously are because they're involved in the alt-right.
Exactly.
So
that is like, that is one of the more brain dead things that is a misunderstanding, I think, about what the alt media is and who they represent.
But also calling somebody incredibly gay is always hilarious. I mean, like,
in the words of Trump, he was tremendously gay.
So good. Yeah.
Also, as just a head-scratching moment for you to finish this podcast on Thursday,
if you can explain this to us.
Yeah, tweet us immediately, or again, Braintrust Approved is our email.
Yeah.
On Thursday, Trump just randomly sent this wacky tweet. They will soon be calling me Mr. Brexit.
Like, what does that mean?
What does that mean?
Brexit was a long time ago. Are we still talking about Brexit? It was like Thursday of this week that he sent this
tweet. Also, they were calling him that months ago when Brexit happened. They have since stopped. Oh, by the way, while we were gone, I also had a fascinating conversation with some pro-Brexiters.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I mean, I was up to a lot.
Seriously?
Yeah, and they were funny because they kept talking about how it was shameful that Brexit got associated with a sort of racist nationalist streak.
Oh, shameful.
At the same time, they went out of their way to mention how excited they were that their son was about to marry an Iraqi woman. Like, about 500 times.
Right.
And I was like, not make you comfortable.
I was going to say,
you are not comfortable with this.
They really wanted to convince you.
They really, it was like every 5 seconds. Uh-huh. And anytime it was mentioned, they mentioned she was Iraqi. Like, she's a British woman, by the way. She's a woman who grew up in Britain.
Right.
She is a person of Iraqi heritage.
Right.
Her parents are Iraqi, but are now immigrants living in Britain. But like, it was like she mentioned the Iraqi fiance.
So good.
And that she was Iraqi, like, every time. And I was like, but yet you're angry that Brexit got associated. They were like, we think it's so wonderful.
Uh-huh.
It's so wonderful that he's marrying this Iraqi woman. Iraqi women are Iraqi when you really, you know, like, it's just like not, it was hilarious.
That's so good.
In any case, that's the news this week and last week.
Right.
The news next week will be delivered to you next week.
That's how it works.
That's how time works. If you need more thoughts on that, you can also email us, braintrustapproved@gmail.com.
That's right.
You know what? Rate us on iTunes.
Oh, yeah.
Why not?
Write a review or something.
Write a review? Rate us on iTunes?
Do whatever.
Yeah. Do some nice stuff for us.
Yeah.
We deserve it.
Share us on Facebook.
Yeah. And look out. We're going to start.
Tell your friends.
We're going to do we started a Meet the Candidate series for the Republican primary.
Right.
Or the primary process.
Yeah.
But people started.
For the Democrats too.
Yeah. We did Lincoln Chafee. People started dropping out so quickly that we kind of gave up the project because it was getting too exhausting. We're going to do a Meet the Candidates for the general election though because they're with us for a few months. There's only four of them.
You like to think that there are enough.
And unlike traditional media, we're going to start with the third party candidates. So
that's right. You
already know everything there is to know. And we're hoping to bring you a nice compendium of things to know about them ultimately.
Right.
But we're going to start with Jill Stein and Gary Johnson. And so look out for those coming soon because
they're going to be great.
They're going to be great.
And you're going to learn things.
You're going to learn things.
And laugh.
And
you're
going
to learn.
You're going to learn and laugh. It's the American dream. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.